This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is David Gardenstein-Ross, who's the Vice President of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies here in Washington. We want to get his thoughts on a critical Supreme Court decision handed down on Monday by a vote of 6-3, the court saying that a law banning support, even humanitarian support, for organizations labeled as terrorist organizations is okay constitutionally. And David, thanks so much for being with us.
It's good to join you.
Well, right after 9/11, this was one of the first steps the government took, was to block support, freeze assets of these terrorist organizations. And then obviously Congress followed up with this law. Are you surprised at all by this decision, by which side Justice Stevens came down on, which was on the side of the majority, the conservative majority, and the law? How do you read this?
It doesn't surprise me that Stevens came down on the side that he did. I think that this actually is not a terribly hard case, even though it was a 6-3 decision. If you look at what was happening in the case, you have some organizations who argued that the law was both vague and also unconstitutional because it would prevent them from specific activities with respect to two terrorist groups, those terrorist groups being the PKK, which is a Kurdish separatist group that threatens Turkey, and the LTTE, which is a Sri Lankan terrorist group. They argued that they wanted to train members of the PKK on how to use humanitarian and international law to peacefully resolve disputes, that they wanted to train the PKK in engaging in political advocacy on behalf of Kurds who lived in Turkey, as well as teaching PKK members about how to petition various representative bodies such as the UN. They also, with respect to LTTE, argued that they wanted to train members to present claims for tsunami-related aid to mediators in international bodies, offer legal expertise in negotiating peace agreements with the Sri Lankan government, and help them to engage in political advocacy. Those were the activities that they wanted to engage in, and they argued that these activities were benign activities. They should be seen as protected by the Constitution, and also insofar as the material support law covered them, they argued that the material support law was overly broad. Ultimately, both the dissent and also the majority rejected the vagueness decision or the vagueness rationale. And the dispute was over whether there's a First Amendment right to train these organizations to take part in these activities. I think that the majority very clearly gets it right. And moving aside from the legal aspect of the decision to the policy aspect of it, the activities that these organizations wanted to engage in would have made the terrorist groups more effective. Training them how to use humanitarian and international law is disputable. That's something that the International Committee on the Red Cross does. I actually think that there are strong justifications for why you might want to do that. But looking at engaging in political advocacy, something that they wanted to help these organizations do, teaching them how to petition various representative bodies, these are things that would actually make them far more effective in attaining their political ends through terrorism. And to the extent that outside actors can make them more effective, that A, is the exact kind of assistance that we want to prevent, and B, it's the kind of thing that would encourage more terrorist organizations to try to meet their goals through violence.
And David, basically trying to use these means, which would be considered okay in some circles, would that be a likely front for saying that we're in touch, we're in connection, we're working with this so-called terrorist organization supposedly on this humanitarian or peace effort, when in reality, behind the scenes, a lot more nefarious things are going on?
That's one of the concerns, and I'm not saying that the petitioners in this case would have wanted to do so, but the more you circumscribe the kind of activities that are acceptable with respect to a terrorist group, the more somebody can say that they're working under one of the okay areas of support to a terrorist group, while in actuality financing some of the more nefarious schemes. This is something that always comes up with debates about Hezbollah and Hamas. Both of whom have a substantial amount of humanitarian work that they do. But the argument of opponents of any kind of aid to Hezbollah and Hamas is that, first of all, their humanitarian projects also serve a military means, because when they offer social services and can outcompete the government in that regard, that helps them to win hearts and minds of the population, thus empowering the terrorist group. And second, money is fungible. You know, if you send money for one purpose, it can end up freeing up other money that can go back to military aspects. So the more that you allow an organization or individuals to assist terrorist groups in certain areas, the more likely it is that those terrorist groups will actually get assistance in other areas. So yes, from a policy perspective, that is indeed one of the concerns. Look, ultimately, this decision was not about policy. It was a legal decision. It was a decision looking at whether the statute was vaguely drafted and looking at whether the First Amendment actually allowed organizations to engage in these type of activities. I think that looking at policy, while it's instructive, that's not really what a court is supposed to do. And that's why I'm not surprised that the decision came down the way that it did.
A couple of quick questions before we let you go. David, some may look at this and look at the way that Chief Justice Roberts wrote the majority opinion, saying that basically this is law needs to be in place given the threat that the United States faces right now. Some say, well, either it's good for all time or it's not good for all time. Maybe it shouldn't be based on present circumstances. How would you argue that?
Well, the opinion is based entirely on how to interpret the law. In general, when you're looking at something like the Constitution doesn't bend for certain circumstances that you're under. And whether or not this law should be in place for all time or whether it's only good right now, that's irrelevant to the decision that the Supreme Court is asked to render, because the Supreme Court is not a policymaking body. It determines whether legislation that was implemented by the legislature, which is the body that is supposed to pass laws, passes constitutional scrutiny. It's responsible for interpreting that legislation. But they're not putting on their policymaker hat and asking whether this law should always be in place.
We're talking with David Gardenstein-Ross of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And David, how does the law apply? How does the circumstances change when the terrorist organization is basically in charge, as is the situation with Hamas in Gaza? The United States just sent $400 million there. How does this maybe not weave in directly with this law, but how do the two square with each other?
Well, there obviously is an intersection. For individuals to provide support to the Hamas government has been illegal and continues to be illegal, even though Hamas is in power within the Gaza Strip. The United States has tried to channel money to the Fatah faction rather than to Hamas. But it does create problems, and ultimately the terror finance laws are a disincentive for people to vote for terrorist groups such as Hamas when it comes to the election, and that one of the things that people have to take into account is the fact that Hamas is an international pariah. You could compare it, for example, to apartheid-era South Africa, where South Africa was an international pariah, and that's one thing that created pressure on the South African government to change and ultimately get rid of the institution of apartheid.
Very interesting. David, thank you so much for your analysis. We'll talk again soon.
Good to join you.
David Gardenstein-Ross is Vice President of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies here in Washington. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.